All right, so we started just scratching the surface of Bishul HaKom. So now we're going to get a little bit more into Bishul HaKom. So we started to discuss last time, even though we started a little out of order by the whole discussion of the Ramah and the Mechaber and the Issur V'Heter about how much Bishul a Jew has to do in order to take away the status of Bishul HaKom. But then we started getting into the Makar of the Issur of Bishul HaKom and of the Issur HaKom and what the reason for the Issur is. So we pointed out what seems like a stira in Rashi at first glance, where Rashi on the Mishnah tells us that kulu mishum chasnus, it's all about chasnus, and on daf lamed ches in the context of the Gemara that talks about whether Bishul HaKom is daraisa or drabanan, where the Gemara says ultimately that it's drabanan and the pasuk is an asmach l'mi'alma, so Rashi writes that it's not mishum chasnus, but rather because of a concern that they might come to feed you a davatame, they might come to feed you something that's not kosher. So what happens in a case where, so we suggested that maybe both are a concern. Maybe the possibility, we point out the Makar Chaim is quoted in the Ol Yaakov, that Rashi's chosish for both reasons. In a situation arises where one reason doesn't apply, but the other one does apply, so we're still going to asur. So it's likely, we pointed out, that originally Chazal asurd because Shamiyach Lenu Davatame, and that was the early Issur Bishul HaKom. If you assume, again, go back to those discussions we had, which one came first, but if you assume that Bishul came first, it likely was for a reason that a Pas HaKom that does not apply to Pas and Chalav and Shemen and all the rest. So initially it was because of Shamiyach Lenu Davar Tameh, and then when they were gozer on all Machalei HaKom, so Kulu Mishum Chasmus, Bishul HaKom is also Mishum Chasmus. So what happens in the case where you're only worried about kashrus, where there's no concern of chasnus? What would be a case where you're only worried about kashrus and not a concern of chasnus? You have a non-religious Jew. So there's no issur of marrying their daughter, a non-religious family. The daughter is still kosher to marry. She's still a Jew. But you do have the concern that Shemiyach Lenu Davar Tameh. So what's the halacha in such a case? So if you look in Pisrei Tshuva over here in Kuf Yud Gimel, Siv Katan Aleph, so says Pisrei Tshuva, Ayin Ber Heitiv Shal Meritzal Shekosav De'ikra Gzeri Mishum Chasmus, V'ayin B'Sefer Tveres Mo Shekosav Dulfi Tamzeh, Shari Bishul Shal Mumar, that if the primary reason is Chasmus, then Mumar is not a problem. De Mishum Chasmus Lekha, there's no Isser of Chasmus when it comes to Mumar. Elo sheish otam v'vor b'beis Yosef, d'shamiyach lenu dvar masurim, ulfizeh gam bishul shal Mumar asur. Davim Mumar l'kol ha-Torah kula. Then if the concern though is davar tameh, then you have to worry about a Mumar as well. D'shamiyach lenu dvarim asurim, ulfizeh hu adin Mumar l'chal Shabbos b'farhesia l'kol ha-Torah kula, chutz mishvayim elu d'dino ka'ovid kuchavim d'alsim beis. Right? So the gam can be shulo asur. So that's the Pesachei Tshuva suggesting from the Teferis L'Moshe that it would be Asur on account of Shamiyach Lenu Davar Tameh, according to that second explanation of Rashi of Shamiyach Lenu Davar Tameh. However, Kaf HaChayim in Sivkat Na'alef is Mekel based on the Taz over here. Because what does the Taz write over here? I mean, we pointed out last time that the Taz in Sivkat Na'alef over here and davar sheinu nechal hatam de ikra gzeri mishum chasnus the davar sheinu chasnus kol kach inan mazmer lechaver olam, meaning he says the real reason is chasnus and therefore something that's eino chashuv kol kach is not included. So what's the Taz telling you? Why is it that it's got to be something that's eino nechal kamoshu chai in order to be a subject to Bishul HaKom? Can't something, even if it's nechal kamoshu chai, have some trafe ingredients mixed in? Meaning, if they're going to prepare something for me, even if it's nechal chai, it doesn't necessarily mean it's kosher just because it's nechal chai. So it says the Taz, because it's not about trafe ingredients. It's really about the ikar tam is mishum chasnus. Now, logically, if both reasons apply, if both reasons are true, then it should still be usher, even if it's nechal kamoshu chai, because you still have to be choshesh of shamiyach lenu davar tameh. So says the Kaf HaChayim, from the way the Taz explains the Mechaber, and really from the halacha of the Mechaber itself, the halacha in the Gemara, that a davar shenechal kamoshu chai is not subject to Bishul HaKom, it seems to assume that chasnus is the real reason. Rashi's additional reason of kashrus, we would say subject to Rabbanu Lekula, and the real reason is chasnus. So kosher food cooked by a non-religious Jew is therefore mutter. So Ravadia in Yabia Omer Chelkei Simin Yud says you could be mekel, but b'chadchila you should try to have a religious Jew turn on the fire, even if you know that the ingredients are kosher, because if the gzeira included non-religious Jews, then the food is going to be aser, even if you know that the food is kosher, because we say lo plug, meaning so Ravadia says, if we're going to assume that the gzeira is mishum yachilem adavetame, but I have a mashkiach there, I know that there's not going to be achilas davetame, but the proprietor of the store is a non-religious Jew, he would still be including the gzeira, meaning even when the reason doesn't apply, but if you hold that the gzeira was made on account of shami yachilem adavetame, that means the getter of the gzeira included someone who's not religious. So you have a non-religious proprietor, you shouldn't be turning on the fire. We had such a case in one of the stores in the Five Towns. We had a almost all of them are owned by frum Jews, but we had a store that's owned by a non-frum Jew, and he turned on the fire. There was no mashkech tmidi. It was a milchik restaurant, and there was concern that he was turning on the fire. So there's a lot to be makel with in terms of that. But lechatchila, you'd rather not have that happen. Lechatchila, you'd rather have a religious Jew turn on the fire. As far as the Tinuk Shenishva, in the Sefer Ol Yaakov, he said Yashav Nevinstal, who said that Tinuk Shenishva can be makel, which is shver lechor, right? Why would you be makel on the Tinuk Shenishva? Meaning the point is shani achlenu davetame. I don't care why he's not from. Point is he doesn't keep kosher, so it's difficult to understand. He quotes from Chaim Kanievsky, who's machmir about the Tinuk Shenishva, which seems to make a lot more logical sense. This isn't like some sort of gezeira against him. You know, we're not like punishing him. It's just a matter of what you can trust. There is a discussion in Poskim if you have a ger who prepares food when he's a non-Jew and then he converts, whether you're allowed to eat his food. Right, you come some, meaning you think, oh, come on, when does that happen? All the time, we do gerus all the time. So you know, every Tuesday, that's where I am, I'm doing gerus, right? So so the person goes to the mikveh, then they go home later that day, they prepare a whole party. A lot of times it's dafka, they prepare a whole party because they're so excited about becoming a Jew. They want to do their first mitzvah. So and one of the first mitzvahs that they typically do is to say brachos as a Jew. And to eat food, they say Birch Satorah, and they say, and they'll go daven a mincha or whatever. But they often want to have a party. It's a very exciting thing to graduate into Kedushas Yisrael. So l'chora, both reasons don't apply. Chashash of Chasnos, because Gzeirah B'Shalakim wasn't about Jews. The person is now Jewish, meaning you're eating food that was cooked by someone who is currently a Jew. So Is that a chashash chasnus? You know that if he had a daughter from before, she's not Jewish, right? So I don't know. But if a Jewish man intermarries, you'll still let him eat his food even though his daughter's not Jewish, right? So you don't really look at what his daughter is. The way the gezeira was made is you look at the person. But do you say that? No. At the time that he cooked it, it became a chefza shalisir. So now that he converts, it can't turn into a chefza shalheter. The isser is already chal. So that's an interesting discussion. As far as gzeira, the second reason of Shami Achlenu Davetame, he knows he prepared it himself. So it's hard to say that there's a chashash of Shami Achlenu Davetame. He can be made that there's no Davetame. But you have to ask the question: when Chazal asked food cooked by a non-Jew, does the yisur take effect when it's cooked, or does the yisur take effect later on when you're eating it? Meaning, does it become a chefza shel yisur, or is it a din in the gavra? You know, that's a somewhat lamdisha question, right? How do you view it? Is it chefza? So, you know, you have the famous nesivus that any yisur drabanan can only be an yisur in the gavra, it can't be an yisur in the chefza. But it could be the way that Rabbanan made this gzeira is that the gavra has to treat it like an isur chafta. Is that once it became asr, it becomes asr, and you're not able to fix it. This goes back to our discussion by Pasachim. Is there a way to correct the isur of Pasachim, right? Is there a way to fix it, Jed?
I don't really be concerned about the daughter who's not Jewish.
Why aren't we concerned?
That wasn't in the gzeira chazal. If
Right? Chazal, meaning Chazal didn't make a gzeira anytime you might develop a relationship with a non-Jewish woman. Right? They made a gzeira. Don't eat food cooked by a non-Jew. The motivation for the gzeira is because that often leads to intermarriage. But the gzeira was don't eat food cooked by a non-Jew. That was the whole gzeira.
What if it's his wife that cooked the food, but he was, maybe it's his money, wife cooked the food, though, would that make a difference?
What do you mean, his wife is Jewish? He married a non-Jew and he converted, and she didn't?
He grew up Jewish, he's not.
Oh, he's a Jew.
From anywhere, so I guess that would go back to the Shiloh now.
No, if his wife cooked the food, she's not Jewish.
It
doesn't matter if it's his money, no. No, we'll get to Bebei Social Yisrael and how that applies. That's coming up. But Lechorot should not make a difference. I think the Ashkachas in Eretz Yisrael are machmir about this. I don't know how often it applies. But once the food is prepared be'isr, before the person converted, the pashtus is it remains asr. And it takes isr takes effect when it's prepared, and the food remains asr for everyone forever. However, in the Chuvas Avnei Zikaron from the early 20th century America, somebody named Rav Alter Pfeffer, he's Mekel. He says that the main reason for the Gzeir is because of Chasnus, and Chasnus doesn't apply in this case because he's a Jew. And he says, even if you want to say the food becomes Asra at the time of cooking and stays Asra forever, that's only for other Jews, who for them, Bishlakum is Asra. But for the Ger, the food is Mutter. Meaning, once something becomes Asr, it can no longer change and become Mutter for the person who it became Asr for. But for this guy, it was never Asr for him. Meaning, when he was a guy, he was Mutter, because a guy is, of course, allowed to eat Bishalakum. And then when he became a Jew, you can't give me the argument, it already was Asr. Not for him. Meaning, he's sort of threading the needle on Isra Gavr and Isra Chepta, right? I mean, Hans Rav Shapta always explained that in the Sivis and Reshlam Dalit, that when you say something is Nisr Chefta, what you're essentially saying is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu built into the Bria that it has characteristics of Isr. And for the Rabbanan to make something Asr, the Rabbanan don't have the capacity to build anything into the Bria with characteristics of anything. The Rabbanan have the right to tell you, Lo Sasr, that you're not allowed to veer from what they say. You have to listen to what the Rabbanan tell you. But that's a din in the Gavra, to listen to what the Rabbanan tell you. So that's why every Yisr D'Oraisa is an Yisr Chavtza, and every Yisr D'Rabbanan is an Yisr Gavra. Right, that's what the Nesibis in that context is explaining, that since every Yisr D'Rabbanan is only Yisr in the Gavra, it's an Yisr of not rebelling against what the Rabbanan tell you. If you violate an Yisr D'Rabbanan b'shogeg, you really violated no Yisr at all. Meaning, if b'shogeg, you eat something that's asr mid'rabbanan, you didn't do anything wrong because you didn't rebel against anybody. You were doing it b'shogeg. Whereas if you're violating Isra d'oraisa b'shogeg, then you did violate an Isra because you're eating something that has inherent characteristics of Isra. And that's how the Nesivus explains the halacha in Shulchan Aruch, that if you buy food from a store and you eat it, you buy lunch for, let's say, $10, and you eat the lunch, and then you find out later that it wasn't kosher. But you ate it already. So can you demand your money back? So you can say, I want my $10 back. So the store owner might say, are you full or are you hungry? And you'll say, I'm full, I'm ready at lunch. So the store owner will say, so then what are you going to give me your $10 back? You got exactly what you wanted out of the food. So the Shulchan Aruch Paskin said, if it was Nisr D'Oraisa, he has to reimburse you $10. But if it was Nisr D'Rabbanan, he doesn't have to reimburse you $10. That's what the Nesivus explains. Because by Nisr D'Oraisa, you actually did a Nisr. So that's not right. He really caused you to do a Nisr. By Nisr D'Rabbanan, you didn't do an Isra, it was b'shogeg, so mainly he doesn't have to reimburse you. You got what you wanted out of it, you're full, and you didn't do any Isra. So says the Nesivus over there. So if you're going to go with this model, that every Isra D'Rabbanan is an Isra in the Gavra, so what's pshat over here? How could it be that that Bishalakum remains Asr even just because it started the Isra? It doesn't sound a chefta shal Isra. So what you would say is, that the Rabbanan tell you, we can only tell you what the din is by you. But part of what the Rabbanan tell you is, once you treat this as Isser, you must always treat it as Isser. So that might be true of the guy who was Jewish at the time that it was cooked. It was cooked by a non-Jew, so the Rabbanan tell the Jew, once you're treating it as Isser, you must always treat it as Isser. And the Rabbanan will tell the Gerus candidate, It's mutter for you when you cook it because you're a non-Jew, and then when you become a Jew, now it's mutter for you weiter, right? Because you don't have a gezeira mishum chasnas anymore. That's when once the gezeira starts to apply to him, it doesn't apply because now it's something that was cooked by a Jew. So it all works within that. That framework of Isra Gavra. I don't know, not so Nogel. It's Nogel the Maisa for people who convert, but I don't think we've ever been asked that question. We've been asked a lot of interesting questions about people trying to figure out what they're, toveling their Kalim, right? Do they have to tovel all their Kalim now that they convert? So that's a discussion, I guess, when we do Tfilas Kalim, is that there's a famous Shemi Shmuel. Quotes from his father, quotes from the Avnei Nezer, that when a ger converts, their kelim are tafel to them and enter kedushas Yisrael with them, and don't require tevila. Hechitesi, right? Such a wild thing. The kelim belong to a guy. Why don't they require tevila? So it's a big chiddush. But afal pikein, if Shechta thought we should instruct the gerim to be tovel without a bracha. That it's enough of a shita that we should tell them to tell their kelim without a bracha. So that comes up all the time. So Rabbi Ram always tells them, go home, tovel all your kelim, but don't recite a bracha because it's suffic whether you actually need to do those kelim. So you should do it, but don't say a bracha. I don't know, they don't often ask about the food that they cooked that morning. It's an interesting question. Okay. Now let's get into some of the nitty-gritty. Nechol kamo shulchai, olol shulchan malachim. Let's go into some of these details. So shulchan paskins, like what the Gemara of Avodah Zarah says, nechol kamo shulchai is mutter, even if a non-Jew cooks it. And there seems to be machlokas. Why? Rashi, Beitza Tazayin Amad Aleph, says that if you have something that's edible raw, like the salted fish that they used to have, so that's not called bishul because you didn't really do anything. You didn't contribute too much. The Ran says that it must be called bishul because you can use it for erev tafshilin. It's just that you haven't contributed anything meaningful, even though you did bishul. Meaning, the way Rashi says seems technicality, that something that's already edible that you then cook, that's not considered a ma'aser bishul. For dinim d'rabban, for dinim d'araisa probably is a ma'aser bishul, but for dinim d'rabban it doesn't have a din of a ma'aser bishul. So the Ran says, what are you talking about? It's not a ma'aser bishul. You're allowed to use it for erev tafshilin, and you need a tafshil. For so it must be that it is called bishul. Elamai, by this din d'rabbanan, it's not tully in the shame bishul. What it's tully in is, did you contribute something significant to the Jew, and therefore it will create a relationship. So exactly the geder, nechol kamo shulchai. What do we consider nechol kamo shulchai? It's a very relevant topic, halacha lemaisa. For example, If a non-Jew cooks salmon for you, are you allowed to eat it? Do you consider salmon to be nechol kamo shulchai? So one might argue, I eat salmon chai all the time. I have sushi all the time, and that's maybe I don't have sashimi. I'm not such a diehard sushi person. I don't eat just the gooey pieces of sashimi, but sushi I'll eat raw salmon. So is that considered nechol? Is that enough of nechol kamo shulchai? And does it change? Meaning, 30 years ago, Jews didn't eat sushi. It was something that was like, ew, people eat raw fish, that sounds gross. And now, you can't, I don't think you're allowed to open up a kosher pizza shop unless you have a sushi counter. Like it's you can't get a shkacha, unless you have a sushi counter. So we have to discuss a number of the gedarim. First of all, what if you have raw food that is only eaten together with something else? It would never be eaten just plain raw. Gilui Marsha, which is here on the page in Shulchan Aruch, quotes from the Magen Avraham in Siman Reish Gimel that even if the food can only be eaten after it's cured with salt, or if the food can only be eaten with bread, it's still considered nechol kamo shulchai. Right? Look in the Gilui Marsha. Afilu davar acher nechol kamo znagvil ginger shnechol chai im lechem umelach shari. That would be mutter. That's considered nechol chai. Dimokin gam dag maliach litzer. Magen Avraham reish gimel sivkat and dalit. So he says he quotes that from a Magen Avraham. that even if it's nechel together with something else chai, that's called nechel chai. Rav Falk explains in Tshuvas Mechz Eliyahu, I mentioned last week, he has like 60 pages on Bishalakum, on contemporary issues related to Bishalakum. Falk was a big posek in Manchester, in England. Manchester Jewish community, for those who are not familiar, is like a very, very Haredi community. And he was one of the big poskim in Manchester. So he, what did he write? He wrote a Tznius book, right? What was the name of the book? Anyone know? Ozahad Levusha, right. I think, you know, he had like pictures of exactly the, but it, all the pictures were as shown on a man, unless you have to ruin by looking at the pictures. You know, it was like a very frum book, you know, like, I don't know why it's frum to dress up men in dresses, but okay, it was a very frum book in terms of how, you know, how tsanua it is. Anyway, so Rav Falk was a big posik, so he writes. Jonas Steinitz bought me his Shalos and Tshuva, so fascinating, I've been enjoying them very much. So he writes, "Hachiluk bein davar atzaruch melichu kvisha, ledavar achaser rak tziruf emlechem chudom emavur meyedav." He says, "What's the difference between that which requires melichu kvisha, where you're going to say that's not called nechel kamo shulchai? Meaning, if I need to salt it, I can't eat it the way it is. So that's not called nechel kamo shulchai. Where if I need to cure it, to treat it, to salt it, something like that." Whereas, if I need to eat it together with bread, otherwise I wouldn't eat it, that is called Nechel Kamo Shulchai. Why is that called Nechel Kamo Shulchai? Either way, you can't have it the way it is. So why should it be a chiluk? So he writes, it's a pashut chiluk. Da mechusa melichu kvisha, mechusa tikun verichuch ba'atzman. Meaning, you're doing something to change the actual chafza, you're doing something to change the actual maichel. And until you salt it or cure it or soak it or whatever, the meichel itself is be'etzem, not rotli to be eaten. So the nachri who cooks it is cooking for you something that's not nechel chai. But if all you need to do is wrap some rice around it, or all you need to do is put some bread together with it, eina machel chaser tikun be'etzem. The food isn't missing any tikkun. That's called nechel chai, and that would not be subject to bishalakum. So if you have a vegetable, let's say, that can only be eaten raw if you dice it up into small pieces. What would be such an example of a vegetable that can only be eaten raw if you dice it up into small pieces? I don't know, an onion? Do people eat onions in big pieces? Only takes a bite out of an onion, right? So only if you cut it in small pieces. A turnip, a parsnip, probably could be a beet. You could eat a beet, right? But a beet salad with little pieces of beet in it, right? You could probably eat. So Rav Falk writes, "Kfiya nira ein lach shiva kadavar nechel chai." That would not be considered nechel chai. Why? The Be'etzem calls manchala nechel v'shal l'kavashos ein lo esariku chanitzrach. You're changing the object when you cut it up into tiny pieces, when you dice it into tiny pieces. I don't know, are you? Not so pashut. I mean, maybe by turnip and a parsnip, because it's by cutting in small pieces, it's not just smaller, it's losing some of the juices, and by losing some of the juices, that's what makes it edible. You know, onions, most folks might think, assume that onions are nechel kamo shulchai. And you can eat an onion that a non-Jew cooked. In the Kovitz Mibes Levi, he says like that. What about a food? So what do we say? So if you have something that can only be nechal together with davar acher, it could be nechal chai, but only with something else that is called nechal chai. But if it could be nechal chai, only if you do something to it, if you you soak it or something like that, then that's not called nechel chai. So the chiluk is, are you doing something to the actual food itself, or are you just surrounding the food with other stuff to make it palatable? So where does that leave us with sushi? So where does that leave us with salmon? Is salmon considered nechel chai from that perspective? So I could eat raw salmon, but I just need to wrap some seaweed and rice around it. I would never eat it just plain. Now it happens to be, a lot of people do eat it just plain, right? They have, I remember when we were in the OU office discussing this with Rav Schechter, because they have to revisit the shaila every year, meaning until they decide it's no problem, you know, once and for all. They have to keep revisiting the shaila. So Rav Schechter was saying, my understanding is that no one eats just plain salmon like that. So we said, you ever go to a chasna? Yeah, he doesn't look at the sushi table. But they have a whole bunch of pieces of sashimi. So it's on a bed of rice, sometimes, right? Is it? No? It's just plain, okay. So we called up the sushi guy, and we called up Avi Schreier at the time, and we asked him, when you put out sashimi at a wedding, like, how much of it goes? He said, however much we put out, that's how much goes. You know, that's the rule of sushi at a Jewish wedding. I don't know if that tells you how many people, what percentage of people eat it. I mean, it could just be the people who eat it really like it, but we'll have to discuss how many people have to eat that food in order for it to, in order for it to qualify. But there was also a misunderstanding. There were people that thought that people eat sushi raw, but only when it's cured and treated and salted or whatever, and only then would you eat salmon raw. But just plain raw salmon, no one would eat. It turns out that's not really true. That's the other thing we asked him. We said, what's the difference between sushi salmon and like a regular piece of salmon? He said, we try to take the part of the salmon that looks nice so that it could look good at the sushi. That's it, but there's nothing. It's the same salmon. There's nothing. There's no process that it really needs to go through. It doesn't need to go through kavisha or malicha or anything else. So it's the same salmon. So l'chora, it's something that's nechel chai, which would be a gevaldik akula if you have a non-Jew cook salmon for you. Meaning you're traveling somewhere. So salmon is the one meat, the one fish rather, that our post can still assume that you could identify without seeing the scales. That just by looking at the flesh, you could say, yeah, that's salmon. And so if you're traveling somewhere, you go to a restaurant and you ask to see a fillet of salmon, tell them to throw some spices on it, double wrap it, throw it in the oven, and you're good. And you'd be allowed to eat it. Right? If you hold that it's considered something that's not chokai. So that's a pretty big deal. I recall, this was 2 years ago, when we were in the OU office, Rav Schechter concluded that it's mutter. And we left the office, and then someone called up from the office. Wait, we're trying to convince him to change his mind. Don't run with the story yet. So I don't know what he said in the end. I have to look back at my notes and see who it came up with. Okay, the Ritva in Sugin Avodah Zarah writes that even something that people always cook, but it's edible raw, is also not substantive lock. I mean, the fact that people always cook it does not mean that it's inedible raw. But the Meiri says, no, it has to be normal to eat it raw. Meaning it has to be that it's not an achila mashuna. Not just that it's not dangerous to eat it raw, but that it's somewhat usual. Because otherwise, the guy is contributing a lot. Because I just wouldn't. I know you can. I know it's not dangerous. Like people tell you, oh, don't worry, you can eat the hot dog raw. Yeah, but I'm not going to. that's... It could be that they're telling the truth. I trust them. It's all cooked in the factory or whatever. I'm not eating it raw. So if it's not normal to eat it raw, then the person is really contributing something to. So if you look in the Bir Agra in Oslamet Gimel, he points to Gemara in Shabbos Kuf Chav Ches that raw meat is edible al yedei adchak and is therefore not muktzah. But the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says that meat is subject to bishalachu. What does that tell you? So even though it's edible raw, but it's not normal to eat it raw, it's only al yedei adchak, so it's not considered nechal chai, and therefore it's subject to bishalachim. It's not dangerous, and it's fine, and people sometimes do it, but it's nachiva mashuna. So take the following. Rav Eliyadah Goldberg found the following life hack. My wife sometimes sends me to buy fruits and vegetables or other groceries, and the part where I have the greatest challenge is in the fruits and vegetables section, because you have to buy not just, first of all, finding the right thing. Okay, that's why, half the vegetables look the same to me, but whatever. But okay, so you find the right thing. So I found an avocado, and it's not the organic kind, so I'm paying the right price, whatever. I finally found that. But she said, she relied on the list, avocado, not too soft, not too hard. Oh, come on. Be proud of me. I found the avocado. I also have to find not too soft, not too hard. So you find these very hard avocados, they're like rock solid, but that's what they have, so what am I supposed to do? So there's a good life hack. If you have an avocado that's not right, if you wrap it in foil and put it in the oven on 200 degrees, and put it in for 10 minutes. It will be perfectly ripe afterwards. 10 minutes, 200 degrees, the avocado is perfectly ripe. So what if a non-Jew does that for you? Right? Meaning, you come home and your wife says, oh, you got the hard avocados again. So instead of, criticizing you, because she wants to encourage you to go shopping again in the future, so she just tells the, if there's a housekeeper or something, do me a favor, wrap it up and throw it in the oven for 10 minutes. It works. 200 degrees, low temperature. So if a non-Jew puts this hard, inedible avocado, is it usher because they made it ripe? So the Gilui Marsha writes, based on the Issur v'Heter, that if a non-Jew cooks hard pears, the pears are mutter because we follow the normal way of how that product is consumed. And most pears are eaten raw. So cooked pears are mutter also. L'chora, the same would be true over here. And even though they are cooking the avocado and thereby making it more edible, and you wouldn't really want to eat it when it's very hard, but avocados are eaten raw. That's how avocados are generally eaten. What if you have a case where some people eat that food raw and some people only eat it cooked? So most poskim, including the Aruch HaShulchan and the Pri Chadash, say that we follow the majority. So if most people eat it raw, it's Nechol Kamo Shulchai. That's where sushi became very tricky. Do the majority of people eat sushi? Do the majority of people eat sashimi? How do you measure the majority on such a thing? So Vazner and Shevel Alevi and Chedek Hei, Simon Sadi Gimel, points out that the Indian Bishal Akum, Shu Gzeiro Mishum Chasnus, Lo iser atzmi, it's not an inherent iser, it's a gzeri mishum chasnus, hem gozu shekol shen nizkak lebishul shalahem oser, v'kol nishalo nizkak lebishul d'nechol k'mo shulchai mutter. He explains what the Taz says, that any time you need their contribution, it's oser. If you didn't need their contribution, it's mutter. The b'zeh yikah gzeri siskar v'sal gaim b'zeh lo. U'p'gzeh ein tela im kol adam koveh la atzmo. Well, he says, considering the nature of Vishalakum, ein tela in koladam kovela atzma, wouldn't it be so strange for everybody to determine, did they provide me with the service? I mean, you have the same salmon that comes out of the oven, and two people, husband and wife, eating together, and for the husband it's mutter, and for the wife it's asa. Because the husband likes sushi and the wife doesn't like sushi. Ein tela? I don't know, it sounds to me like a tela. No? The Maisa, that's not how he concludes. The Shevet HaLevi Rav Ozner says it has to be based on the majority of people, and therefore you follow the majority of people. How do you measure that? is this like a typical robe? Is this a 51% robe? If 51% of the Jews eat sushi, then that's the way it works. I don't know, 51% of the Jews eat fish. I mean, it can't be, right? It can't be wrong. I think you have to say it based on whether it's an achila mishuna or not. Is that what, is that what's done? You see someone eating sushi and people don't say, oh God, I can't believe you're eating that. No, it's just like, yeah, that's what people eat. I don't think rove over here could possibly mean, like a rove of society, because there's probably no single food that a rove of society eats. There's so many options of foods out there that I don't know what particular food a rove of society eats. Mashed potatoes are also an interesting one. A food is cooked by a non-Jew and then it's dehydrated. In yeshivas, the way they are, like in the army, they make mashed potatoes. They're not actually mashing the potatoes. They buy this mix and they mix it with water and it looks somewhat like mashed potatoes. So it's recooked. So the company cooks the potatoes. They dehydrate the potatoes. Then you'll bring it home. You'll buy it. You'll bring it home and you'll rehydrate it and cook the potatoes. So Nechubas Avkas Rocha, the Beis Yosef and Simon Lamed writes that it's mutala is at sarach, like for Sugas Shabbos, because it could be samich on the sheet of the Ra'ah that by Bishalakum there could be an Isra Chazer Lehetela. Well, this is going back to that question. Meaning, when the guy cooked the potatoes in the factory, it was Bishalakum. So now he dehydrated them, and they're not edible, and I'm going to make them edible. So can you have an Isser that's Chazer Lehetela? Because now the Jew is contributing something that made it edible. So the Isser v'Heter holds that if a Nachri cooks it to Macho Ben Drusai, and it's Asher, and then a Jew cooks it the rest of the way, the Ra'ah holds its mutter. right? That it's mutter if you do like that. I was asked right away, as soon as the guy cooked it to the machul ben Josiah, it became asr. But it wasn't fully edible yet, it wasn't fully cooked, so the Jew cooks it the rest of the way, it becomes mutter. So here also, even though it became asr, there's now a reason to be matter, because now it needs a new bishul, so it's going to be gomer b'yad Yisrael. Now, granted, the afkas rochel is only mekel b'shas l'chak, but that's l'shitaso, because if you look in Kufi Gimel Tess over here, he doesn't allow relying on the ra'al l'chachila, he's machmer for the rashba, that when something becomes asr, it remains asr permanently. So you can have this discussion whether it becomes whether you can fix bishul akum afterwards. So according to the mechaber, that l'chadchila you're not allowed to assume that you can fix bishul akum. So that's why in the Tshuvas Afkas Rochel, he's also going to say that you can't l'chadchila fix bishul akum, that only leis atzara. But the Ramah we're going to see is mekel, like he's makriya lahakel, like the Ra'ah. So l'chora we could be mekel l'chadchila on the mashed potatoes. It's the same thing or similar to. A guy cooking it to Machal Ben Josiah and us cooking it the rest of the way. In fact, in the Yad Ephraim, at the beginning of Kofi Gimli, quotes the Afkas Rochel. I look at the Yad Ephraim. Where is it? Is it on the page here? I don't know where he went. But the Yad Ephraim quotes this Afkas Rochel. And he leaves out the part about le'is hatzorech or shasachak. How does he leave that out? Why does he leave it out? Because he knows that the Afkas Rochel only wrote out l'shitaso. Afkas Rochel is base yosef, so he only wrote out l'shitaso where it's only giving mutter b'shasachak. Ashkenaz are mekel lechadchila. So it would seem that if a Jew did the original cooking of the potatoes and then a non-Jew prepared the dehydrated potatoes, that would be a problem because they were in an echokoshulchai in their dehydrated form. Or you could say that no, maybe since the Jewish bishul is still recognizable and impactful, it's considered ein tchilas of a gamro biyad ovid chavim biyad nachri. So it's not an issue of bishul nachri. That's what Shulchanach says of Yen Sivat. Kol shem bishul yisrael ma'at bishul lebein b'tchil lebein b'sof mutter. So maybe if you have a Jewish company, you have a firm brand of mashed potatoes, even having a non-Jewish cook, which is probably the more, it's probably more nogea, right? They probably have like that in a lot of yeshivas or whatever, that whoever's helping in the kitchen is going to prepare the mashed potatoes. So probably you can allow that based on that halacha in Sitva. David Kirsch. Oh, there's two David Kirsch questions. Were they both from just now? When we say that we're concerned about the non-Jew feeding us non-kosher, is it that he would trick us? That he's not holding in trade ingredients? Or some of that could be enough kamina by a mumma? Or would that be enough kamina by a mumma? I think they're both true by a mumma. Why would the Marshal allow this pear avocado in there? Oh, because the mumma is probably holy. It depends what kind of mumma, right? Sometimes, you know, if he's a shenu pirish, then yeah, I guess he is. I think it's just that they wouldn't care. They wouldn't care to feed us a double tummy because they don't respect the whole system, right? That's why there's no nemanos and kashrus for someone who doesn't keep kosher, because they think, oh, well, you don't know, can't hurt you. They're not being malicious. They just think that it's silly, all this stuff, all this, you know, care that we take. Why would Marshal allow this pear avocado header? If it's something that most people wouldn't eat until it's more ripe, shouldn't this be a problem? No, I think the assumption is we go by the type of the food that it is. And that type of food, people eat it raw. Then you have, sushi traditionally, going back to sushi for a little bit, before like the last 20 years, sushi was always something that, like in certain countries, was a very popular food in the Far East, and here it was not, right? In the United States, it was not. Jews were eating cholent and kishka. Jews were not eating sushi. And even, in general, you didn't have too many sushi restaurants here. So how do we deal with that? There are different countries that have different... So the Aruch HaShulchan and Sufi Bey says that each country should follow its own practices of its own country, as far as Nachu Kamo Shulchai. So if there are foods that are eaten raw in one country, a Jew in that country can eat those foods even when they're cooked by a non-Jew. And even if in a different country those foods are only eaten cooked. However, Ravazer, Shevet Alevi, Chelik Tesim, Kuf Samach Gimel. Va'afilu neim al-chalik bein Asra l'medina. Ubebendina in halchum basen ruba di'alma. Kuma shkaz v'sev ha'aruch ha'shulchan shum sikir beiz, v'ayin tol shabbos adi beiz ba'ol. Hainu de'ein medinas yafin batla l'rov ha'olam. Kivan, de medina shlema ochlim kushul chai. Aval adayin ein ze omer, di'imrov ruba di'alma, ein halchum chai. Uba echad ba'ofen zmani le'medina shalchum chai, pshita de'ein lo heter bishol goy. Well, what's what chiluk is he making? Japan is not going to be batel the rov ha'olam because it's a full medina that's shalchum kishul chai. But that doesn't mean to say that if you have something that the majority of the world does not eat something chai, and one guy comes on a vacation to a medina that they do eat it chai, so pshita de no heter bishul goy. Chadadu atzmo eino ochel chai va'od ruba di'alma. He says you have two things working against you. The din of the aruch hashulchan is for Jews who live in that country. But if you're visiting that country, so you're not among those who are ochel, that food chai, even if the majority of people in that country do, but the majority of the world don't, and you don't, then you don't have that heter. Meaning, in the old days, a Jew would go to Japan, so someone asked of us, when you're in Japan, can you eat cooked salmon that, that a non-Jew cooks? Nechol chai, the whole Japan is eating raw salmon, so it's nechol chai. So Rav Azar says, no, it's nechol chai for Jews who live in Japan. But you don't live in Japan, and even if you're visiting, so you know, a lot of times when people visit, they want to eat the foods of the local country or whatever. But he says, no, that doesn't work. It's not the pashas of what the Aruch HaShulchan means. I think the Aruch HaShulchan doesn't distinguish between a visitor and a resident.
What about on the reverse, if the visitor, I don't even know how to say it, if the visitor comes from a place where they do eat a chai and goes to a place where they don't?
Right.
Like it's 2 day yom tov when you go to, is it the makom that's goreim?
Yeah, so I would think that, the Aruch HaShulchan seems to say where you are, right? He doesn't really distinguish between a visitor and a non-visitor. I think Rav Azar is only just being machmir for a visitor. I don't think he would be making.
Lepora makes sense, because chasmus, like, it takes two to tango, it needs to be something that the recipient feels grateful that they provided, and also that the giver feels like they're doing it.
So that's why you'd be machmir? I don't know. Does the giver feel like he's doing a tovah? You're visiting a country where everyone eats it chai.
Right, so in that case, but the recipient does. So.
Oh, I mean, as long as one
as
or the other?
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to work out in all the permutations. You know, I mean, at some point, you just have to say, there's a gzeira and kach gazu, kach lo gazu. Oh, I wrote in my notes a little bit about what Rav Shachter says about sushi. Oh, okay, so let's go to this. Right, so let's say this is sushi. Rav Shachter, a lot of that sushi today. There's a Daf HaKashrus in Adar 5774, Tafshinayim Dalet, which is before I had this discussion with Rav Shachter 2 years ago. Rav Shachter wrote as follows: V'nir lomar, sheze lo kol kach pashut, sheze nikur nechol kmo shul chai. It's not so pashut that sushi is called nechol kmo shul chai. Shrei eino kmo shul chatich zdad b'fnei atzmo, ele b'tziruf ma'orez v'shar hirakos. I mean, he's assuming people are sushi eaters, but they're not sashimi eaters. So since you would only eat it together with shar yirakos and with rice, that's not called nechol kmo shul chai. Va'achuz hadag, shebechatich, wait, 1 second, right off the bat, no, what's he doing? He's arguing with? Gilui Marsha, no? Gilui Marsha said, when it comes to the ginger, that you can only eat it together with bread, that's still called nechol kmo shul chai, even though you would only eat it together with bread. Because it's not, and we explained, because you're not changing the etzem hadavar, it's just something that goes along. Rav Shachter just takes it on pashut, not like the Gilui Marsha. Right? He writes that you would only eat it together with rice and other vegetables. Va'achuz hadag shebechatichas sushi u'pachsim chamish ma'achuz. And it's less than 50% fish. Va'har be'och limin sushi she'in bechatichas dag klal. In fact, a lot of people will eat sushi that only have vegetables. And therefore the fish is not the ikr, so you're not really eating fish raw, because you would never eat fish as the ikr raw. So it's not necessarily against the Gilui Marsha. It means something different, right? The Gilui Marsha says that something, a piece of ginger, that you want to eat ginger, but you can't eat it alone, so you take some, you have it together with bread to take the edge off. In that case, the bread is the tuffel, the ginger is the ikr. You really try to eat ginger, it's just that the bread is going to take the edge off it. That's considered nechel kamo shulchai. But such a shechter, the sushi, the fish, is never the ikur. It's always the rice and the vegetables that are the ikur. Mela, you don't eat sushi, you don't eat fish, chai. Val pipshuto dino ketafel. Nafkamina, outside of Hilchos Bishul Akum? Bracha. Therefore says Rosh Hashanah, min ha'chol, levarich mezonos. When you eat sushi, you should say mezonos. This is not one of the Chamesh Saminim, so you don't say kol shi'esh bo. Why do you say mezonos and sushi? I don't know if you do, but why does Rosh Hashanah think you say mezonos and sushi? Because the majority is the rice, volume-wise. Bezman sha'oris ro'arov, asher mele legab birtzenen, indino ke'ikr. V'yesh makom lomer, sharak mekilim b'nechuk moshu chai, k'shenechuk b'toris atzmo, v'lo k'shenechuk b'toris tafel. Nechuk moshu chai means that you eat it chai, not that you include it as a tafel to some other food when it is raw. V'af sheyesh ochum es hadag v'fnei atzmo b'li ha'orez v'shari rakos, ay sashimi, al pshuto nira sha'osa anhaga adayim lo nespashta maspik b'mekomenu v'rak miyut b'nei adam u'shosim kei. So that's what he wrote in Tavshinayin Dalit. So in Tavshinayin Test, when we were meeting with him, we called up Avi Schreier and we said, Avi, how much sashimi goes at weddings? And he says, however much I can put out, I can't cut it fast enough to put out at weddings. Jews are chazes, he didn't say that. But he said, I can't cut it fast enough, it'll all get eaten. So Shach said, ooh, maybe sashimi is popular enough. And that will change the whole halacha of eating. Again, it doesn't change the halacha of sushi. Sushi is sushi, it's fine anyway. It will change the halacha about eating baked salmon, right? Or grilled salmon. Wow. So yeah, so that's what he wanted to suggest. Good. So that's Nechol Kmo Shulchai. Anything we didn't cover in Nechol Kmo Shulchai? Move on to Olo Shulchan Malachim a little bit. Let's go to Olo Shulchan Malachim. Good over there. Good over there. Okay. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah Lamed Hei told us, and we saw before, that any food that would be Olo Shulchan Malachim is subject to Bishul Akum. If it's not Olo Shulchan Malachim, not subject to Bishul Akum. How exactly do we define Olo Shulchan Malachim? So some of the poskim suggest any food that's important enough that it could be used to lure a Jew into a non-Jew's home. Hey, come over, we're having whatever. You know, you have a guest over and it's the kind of food that you serve a guest. Right? If you look in the Taz, no, again, a Taz of Kanalov, meaning that you have the idea that ain adam mazmin chavero alav. Right? It has to be something that you'd be mazmin chavero alav. So it doesn't have to be necessarily that it's served at a royal banquet, but it's something that you would serve when you have guests over. So, Rav Israel Orbach writes as follows. I'm trying to see where I found this. I don't know. Oh, in the Maria Journal. Shvat Tavshin Ayin Gil. He writes as follows. Batnai Hashem, Shia Ola al Shulchan Malachim, Huskar B'Lashon Os Kama Poskim B'Lashon Ola al Shulchan Sarin. Umuvor Dakavanihi, La'achila Chashuva Shal Anashim Mechubadim. A chashva achil of respected people. Ubizmanein umistaver shamo deidhu, mashenechel besudos kedolos chashuvos kegonsudos shal chasna, o yirua chashuv acher. That it's got to be something that's like a wedding or, you know, a catered event. Ubitam tenaizat pirusharan bambu vibitasiv kanal sheikra xerim shum chaslus shulyuz menua akumetzlo besuuda. Vidavar sheinu ola shulchum lachim lechel bosapas. If it's not Olah Shulchan Malachim, then you wouldn't invite someone for it. V'ahaynu, v'atam shas v'chazal b'shul yakum, v'mishum shalidei achid li'imo, yovel li'dei kiruv hadas imo, v'meil li'yovel li'dei chasnas. Since the whole thing is to create a relationship, v'mishum kach, lo asu ela achila chashuva sha'adam mazmen eschaveru l'tzorech achila zu, v'achila kazu yesh chashay mashachay yisrael lechol etzlo. אבל באכילה שאין לה חשיבוס, הוא מוציא יסל כל האדם, הוא יכול רק למשוך לישראל לאכול אצלו. A guy is not going to say, come over to my house, we're eating popcorn. I don't know, there are fancy popcorns and stuff, but you know, regular popcorn in the bag that you buy in the supermarket. However, Rav Falk says this is a mistake. He says, to say that it's got to be something that they would serve at chasana, he doesn't think that that's true. He says, that's not the same. Something you would invite somebody for, and something that would be served at chasana are very different. Rav Falk writes, V'achar ha'kdom zu askir ma demitza'er osi tuva. He says, I'm very bothered, binyan zeh shalol shalchum lachim. Demukubal etzal harbi tamid cham rabbanim. A lot of tamid cham rabbanim believe, shageda shalol shalchum lachim, husheira magisha ma'achal zeh b'chasana. That they don't serve it at a wedding. Ta'ayin luf nekibut shalochin of badim, b'chasana yidon, k'shulchum lachim badim. V'lo eida mi gila lahem sod zeh. I don't know where they got this idea from. Davar she'ein lo shum makar klal u'klal. Va'adrabim, v'vor baramim lehepich. Da'gedru ma'ashem melech ochel b'shulchan l'sudas hayom shalo, hu b'darga achas im'asha adam pratim, as min chaver olav. He says, from the Rambam it sounds that whatever a king would eat for breakfast is what I would invite somebody else to my house to eat. V'lo b'inan she'amachol b'tachlis ha'chashivos. It doesn't have to be when I'm pretending that I'm a king. You know, when I'm making a wedding and I'm trying to be fancy, whatever a king would eat normally is what I would invite guests for. Meaning there are three madrigas for normal people. There's what I normally eat, there's what I invite guests for, and there's what I serve at my kid's wedding. And you don't have to get to that level. V'chein pashur bar l'anis daiti. D'masha anu achum b'su d'sha b'shi su d'yafel l'fi asagasenu b'chlal ola al-shulchum l'achum. He says, whatever was served at your Shabbos table is all the Shulchan Malachim. Look, can you think of something served at your Shabbos table but would never be served at a wedding?
Cholent.
Right? You ever see cholent at a wedding? Or bar mitzvah? Even bar mitzvah, you don't really see it.
I feel like you would. I mean, people would serve cholent at a wedding, you know? Not because it's not fancy, it's just like, right, so.
I know. I mean, now you see, like in the kiddushes, and like I mean, at least pre-COVID in the five towns, it was a big thing to have like six types of cholent. You have like the chili cholent, you have the pastrami cholent, you have the Mexican cholent, the Mexican cholent is ridiculous. it became like cholent is like a special, Chinese cholent. Rav Falk tainas that an example of this would be corn. You have a corn salad at your table, but you don't have corn salad at weddings.
It's an arbitrary thing.
Okay. because it's not just so arbitrary, it's very nogel maisa. Canned corn is a very common food. And they sell it in the can, and those cans are all cooked. This is very important, Lamaisa. Is corn eaten raw?
No.
Some do.
Enough? Rove?
I don't know if people are aware of it, but it can be done.
But
was it hard?
I don't think Rove people eat it raw. No, they put it on the grill, they'll cook it, they'll boil it, they'll just.
But it can be done.
It can be done.
It's like popcorn kernels. Nobody eats popcorn kernels raw.
Yeah.
That's dry corn.
Rav Forst in his Sefer asked the Deborah Tzina Rav about corn, whether it's all Shulchan Malachim, and his shaila was most corn is planted for Michael Behema.
Rabbi Blythe thinks that you don't make a bracha on corn because Michael
Behema. So Deborah Tzina told Rav Forst, "Eino b'chal all Shulchan Malachim," meaning the tzad that he gave was because Michael Behema. That's not so pashut. It's not so pashut at all. Rabbi Blythe Sa'ar is also not so pashut. First of all, we serve corn at Shabbos meals. We have corn salads and things like that, I think. I don't know. I've been to weddings now. The weddings in the more heinisch places in Brooklyn. They'll have, pickles and coleslaw and corn salad on the table. They'll often have like that. I happen to enjoy it. Second of all, the metzias about the corn is not correct. I know this because I was giving a 10-minute halacha shiur this past week on the proper bracha to say on crispix. So I was discussing corn, and you know, the bracha you're supposed to say on corn is
Adama,
right? So someone spoke up, it wasn't a true question, so someone spoke up and said, no, the corn in Crispix is animal corn. I said, what are you talking about? someone else sent me an email with nebraskacorn.com or something, right? And it said that more than 99% of the corn grown in Nebraska is meant only for animals and for making the corn flour that they use for cereals. And it's a different kind of corn. It's not the same sweet plum. It looks different. You could see that it's corn, but it looks entirely different than the kind of corn that we eat. And people don't eat that corn. So it's very shaykh that that's shahakal. You would never eat it in its plain form. You can't even cook it and eat it. It would be too bitter. It wouldn't be good. So it's very possible that that's shahakal. So for the Debrecen to say, oh, it's all Michael Behema, it's not really all Michael. The kind of corn that we're eating is very much not Michael Behema. That plump, whatever, you know, that's 1% of the corn. That's what ends up in the supermarket.
Just on Rabbi Blake, why wouldn't you say rare? I'm afraid that what was planted was really meant for Michael Adam.
No, it's a different type.
But that type is eaten by people now because it's used in the corn flour. It's used for cereal.
But never in its meaning, only when they reconstitute it and break it down and process. No, regular corn is not processed. Regular corn is not processed. Regular corn is just regular corn. You can take it right out of the husk and put it in boiling water and cook it and rub some butter on it or whatever and salt, and it's delicious. No? So I think it's a big enough gamin over here as far as this. Okay, so whether corn salad is, you know, Micah thinks it's too rad than other food, but you know, I don't know. Can you think of other foods that are different between Shabbos and what? Would you say gefilte fish? Awesome. It's a good one.
Sardines or
no? Sardines at the Shabbos table?
Herring.
Yeah, sardines at the Shabbos. Herring?
My father likes sardines at the
Shabbos. Oh, really? Yeah. Okay, all right. Depends on the Shabbos table. I'd be grossed out. my father-in-law would if we would give it to him also, probably. Now that I think about it. But, so this luchara is a subject of machlokas, whether chasana is the gather, or like Rabbi Falk wants to say, a Shabbos meal is the gather. Okay, we'll continue in Olal Shulchan Aruch Beis Hashem tomorrow. Foods that don't taste good, foods that you bring from one place to the other. Potato chips, potato chips, that's a big one. French fries, French fry machine. Okay, we'll get there, Beis Hashem. Oh, there's another one. Oh, Ari Brands, Nachi Feld, what about bagels and lox? Lox, you mean. Bagels is no... lox is salmon. Ari Brands, how literally do we apply the Aruch HaShulchan and Rav Azim nowadays, considering everyone sees what's wrong with TV in other countries on TV, internet? Yeah, I hear that. I mean, nothing looks weird anymore, because, you see what everybody's eating. Potato, Simon asks. We'll get to it, Simon, tomorrow. I don't know, Ari. I don't know.